This is the overview. First, I will give you a visualization of the whole workflow. Then Brian will talk about choosing your hardware and choosing your software for human annotation. Then I'll come back to tell you a little bit about automated analysis. Then Mimi will discuss data collection planning and sampling issues. Sorry, Melanie. Sorry. I pointed to you and then I said the wrong name. And Mimi will finish with a forward-looking annotation proposal. So this is the workflow. You usually, sorry, some of the animation is a bit strange, apparently. There's one arrow there. Basically, you start your workflow here. You decide whether you have Alina recording on software or not. The reason why I put them together is because the Alina hardware without the software doesn't make any sense. In order to be able to extract the recording from the Alina device, you need to have paid for the software.
And it's $10,000.
More than that.
More than that?
More than that.
Wow.
Well, except if you're a student, or you promise them not to publish anything, in which case they will give you one for $1,000, which you can use to collect data, pilot data, to write a grant, and then get the full version.
Oh, interesting.
So students actually have it for yes, it's very cheap. Okay, so you can have the recorder without the software. You can also not have the software without the recorder. So you cannot plug in any recorder to their software and analyze it. No, they have. So yeah, if you go Alina, you go Alina all the way. You cannot have half of it. So at this point, you decide, do I have Alina recorder and software or not? If you do, then you have these things for free. The annotation is the process whereby you take a whole recording. Could be short, could be long. In this case, it's very long. And this is going to be cut into chunks. That are attributed to different broad speaker classes. I will talk about the classes later, but by and large, female adult, male adult, key child, other children, and other categories. It also gives you for free an estimation of adult word counts. I'll tell you a little bit about how it does that. It also gives you for free a quantity for each one of these tagged vocalizations for the child. It splits them into linguistic and non-linguistic. And, of course, we'll talk about the fact that these are not 100% correct. Obviously, no one will ever get 100% correct, but... So this is what you have for free, and you can continue working on that, right? You can augment it with whatever you normally do. Notice you don't have a transcription. It doesn't give you speech recognition. It's not like when you talk to Siri, and then Siri writes down what you say. We don't have that for these kinds of recordings. So let's assume you don't have 12,000 euros, and you're not a student, so you don't have a Alina recorder. And so basically, here you need to decide whether you have time and or money for this human labeling. So you have this choice. You're either going to answer yes, in which case all the usual annotation times apply. So by and large, a typical average is it will take you 3 or 4 times the playback time to transcribe something. In my own work, I actually find that people who are doing this broad derivation, not even transcription, sorry, this is just derivation saying who speaks when. The people I, for some reason, the people I'm working with take more or less like 7 or 8 times the recording time. And I will give you some numbers of what that, we'll talk about some numbers of what that means if you imagine it at the scale of the whole recording. If you want to do any kind of speaker annotation, it's the same as if you have a short recording, it will take you as long as needed. Sometimes I wrote 7 to 20, it could be 40, it could be 50, it could be 100. Sometimes it gets you a very long time to get into the recording the way you need. Let's assume you don't have all that time. You have another choice. You might have some expertise to perform some automatic labeling. And I'll talk about what options are there. But basically, you need to have some expertise, local expertise, or for yourself. If you do have it, you still need some annotation, some hand-done annotation to evaluate your system. And this problem is actually not trivial. It's far from trivial. So if you don't have that expertise, then you're stuck. You cannot get there, right? So if you cannot find the Alina software, you don't have the time to do annotation, you don't have the expertise to do automatic labeling, which is not an easy problem, then you're doomed. This is not going to work. You need to go back and revise some of your other choices. Okay. So with that, I will just hand it over to Brian.
Okay.
So we hope this advances. Yeah, no, we got the same problem now with my machine.
Yeah, well, I expected that would be okay.
Yeah.
I would guess.
So do the plug unplug?
Yeah, maybe we can, like you said, maybe we don't need to project it.
I mean, is it a mirroring problem? Did I try to not mirror?
No, I think it's just temperamental.
Okay, just temperamental.
Yeah. I'll do the same thing before. See if that works.
No, good. So both Alex and I and other people have been trying to look at different recorders that one can use to do this, and I think you found some very interesting spy cameras or spy recorders from based on the Russian KGB. Okay, I saw some pictures. I don't know how much these cost.
Well, some of them were 300, so they were pretty expensive.
Oh, not too bad though. Yeah, not too bad. So I evaluated some myself. Now this one. We evaluated, and I actually, if you like, I have some of the WAVE files from these you can listen to. So maybe after the seminar if you want to listen. But actually, the one that I liked, I don't have the picture of the... Oh, you didn't get my most recent update. I updated this. Yeah. Somehow, you didn't get in there. But there is a one that I call the VP10 from Olympus. So this is VictorPro... This is the Lowrance. I've used this. This is really high quality. It's about this big, okay? But it's too heavy to wear on a child, okay? This is very, very light. This is a USB stick, right? Just a little USB like that. But the quality is not good enough. So we did evaluate it. The audio is just not... It has too many problems. It looks really good. It's an Olympus, which has fantastic... experience. The Olympus company makes 100 different these small digital recorders, 100 different models. And this one looks very good, but actually the audio from the other one, which is called the Olympus VP10, is the best. It's better than this is the 853, but I tested out the audio, and the audio is better from this one. So the VP10 has a clip. You can wear it right here, and it's about that long, and just like a pencil, like a big, thick pencil, like a marking. You know the marking pencils, right? And weighs, 2 ounces maybe, not just nothing. It has on-off, and it can record. So recording time and battery time are the big issues with these. Battery time is the most important issue, not recording time. All of them have about 8 gigabytes of memory, which is enough for maybe 3 days. I should say, this one only records MP3. This one records MP3 and WAVE. This one, MP3. I think that's the problem with this, is just too low quality. But the little one, the VP10, records both WAVE and MP3. And I found it just really good. So I would recommend this. It costs $60. And you could get 10 of these. Okay? And give them to all your families. And if it is a rechargeable battery. So actually, this one is the same way. You can press a back and a little USB stick comes out. And you push it into your computer. The VP10 is even the same idea. At the very end of this little tube is a USB that sticks into the computer. So I really think this is a great, great possibility. This is almost the same Olympus as I tried, I think. Maybe. These are some pictures of Lena outfits. Here's a Lena or two. What's that?
The Lena are the fashion ones of the mom.
Right here, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The clothing.
Oh, and this is the Lena clothing?
Yeah.
And this is ones you made?
Right.
Oh, okay. So there is an issue about should the microphone be under the clothing, in the clothing, behind the clothing? And if possible, you really would rather have it on the top of the clothing. So the nice thing about the VP10 is it's clip. So if you clip it, it's going to sit outside the clothing. It also has a thing called anti-rustling. So again, if you hear any noise of the fabric, it defeats that noise. So there are different settings for the recording. So, you know, these are things you can try, but I tried them, and we're going to do some more experimentation with this. One of the things we want to do is to see if the recording from these other devices is as good as the Lena, okay? And I don't even know that, because I actually didn't have, I had a Lena, but I don't have a Lena recorder, and I couldn't even, you know, crazy, okay. But Lena also only does mono, which is not good, because if you have stereo, you can do more speech recognition separation of different people talking. You know how your ears can hear separation because of different arrival times. So the same with the stereo. The farther apart, the more you can tell the two different voices. Okay. So is this me? No, this is you again. Oh, this is still me? Okay. Well, but I mean, this is Nidhi's. What should I say here?
Do you
want to say anything?
Monica brought up using more than just audio.
Okay, yeah.
I'm using the Olympus ones that you pointed out aren't quite as good. So
is this your device?
Yeah, and then there's a small camera that takes a photo a couple times a minute with a fitted with a fisheye lens that you can see the entire frontal environment of what the
Okay. I think that's great, yeah. That's fantastic, really.
But it's not like a unified device, so it introduces troubles of...
Okay, yeah.
Which is partly what Monica is...
So also some people in Singapore are trying to create yet another device, okay, that would include... I'm trying to remember the fellow who works there is... I'll remember his name in a second. But he's working with the engineers in the universities in Singapore trying to make a new device that would be, you know, just as good for recording, but also doing what Mehdi said with the video. Yeah. Right now, the Olympus is a stereo, but some people say you should have three microphones. I don't know if this is really practical. I don't know. Okay. Okay. Okay.
So, Monica,
wow, that's great too. Another one.
So, Marisa was saying, we try to solve the problem synchronizing our data streams, and we came up with a small USB stick sized device which can record audio.
Wow.
And the distance of caregivers and heart rate. So you said what you're holding? So this is the device.
That's how big it is?
Yeah, that's how big it is. This is
you can hear it,
right? And
I know. Oh,
and
there, wow, yeah.
And,
it's really USB, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's a USB-type thing. But the problem is that we need a battery pack, which is rather large.
Oh,
comparison.
Yeah.
There are three... two-way battery thing.
Oh,
and
this is the battery pack, huh?
Yeah, this is the battery pack, so it's But there's a new chip out, which we're hoping to transfer this to, but it will take about 2 years, probably, which we'll be able to run with just one battery, and then we'll get integrated into one thing. And device with each graph. And so the big advantage is that all our data is synchronized. We can also measure GPS, the Earth magnetic field. Exposed to that sounds sort of weird. Why do you want to do that? But if the caregiver is also wearing a thing like that, you can see whether they're facing each other. And we have 3D acceleration in this. But I haven't tried it. I've just piloted the audio, the EEG, and the distance of caregivers.
Mm-hmm.
So to get the distance of the caregivers, they also have to wear a little thing, which we implemented in sort of a little pocket that they walk around their neck. But we're still working on this, and it's not for sale. So anyone wants to use this, they have to enter into some sort of cooperation with us. But it's not... awfully expensive, so each of these little devices
But you have to make them. You when you say cost $100 to make, I don't quite understand. How can you?
Yeah.
If they're not made by a company.
No, they're not made by.
Then it may cost $200 for you to make.
Yes, and because we're not selling them.
Yeah. Go to Singapore and get those guys to make it for you. Yeah.
We are not allowed to because they were developed with public funding in the European Union, so we're not allowed to sell them.
Give us the plans and we'll go to Singapore. Yeah.
No, you just have to.
Well, okay, we'll steal them.
You just have to do a project and basically hire me. That's
yeah,
the deal.
That'd be the deal. Okay. Well, seriously. Okay, so software is the other thing. So if you, really, honestly, even if you have Alina, you still would have to, if you want to do any transcription, you still have to, in the end, create a transcript. There's no transcript there. At that point, because we have this automatic translation to chat, then, you know, we have, in a sense, a framework that you can use rather directly, which would be just, you know, you have this diarized chat file and you go in there and transcribe, the utterances that that have been segmented out. We really should show you some of these files. Can I leave this presentation and go out? Or maybe afterwards. I don't know if we leave it. It's kind of hard to get back sometimes.
Well, let's keep going.
Yeah, I think we should show an ITS file and a chat file so people can see that, you know. Yeah. But anyway... it is possible, there are some scripts that will allow you to find a part of the interaction that is where a lot of people are talking, okay? And that might be a good target for transcribing. So in any case, you can transcribe in either CLAN, ELAN, PROT, FON, or DataView. Would anyone else want me to talk about it? I mean, there might be 8 other systems. Anyone have another system that they're interested in transcribing in? Oh, Salt. Oh, please. No. Yeah, because it's not linked. It's not. Salt has no audio linkage. Yeah. It would be. We could translate, though, out of Salt into chat. So, no, you really don't want to transcribe in Salt. I'm sorry. I'm obviously biased. Okay. But I do want to say Elan is great. So I will say very good things about Elan. Yes.
Can you go from CLAN to Salt?
No, but you can go from Salt to CLAN. Yeah. I mean, why would you go from CLAN to Salt? I see. Take the diarized Lena file in CLAN and, oh my God, this would just be crazy. You really don't want to do this. So actually Salt is just typing. Yeah. Actually, Salt is just typing. It really isn't. It just doesn't have a transcription system. Some of these others, you can hear the audio linking. That's how they work, okay? You hear the audio, you transcribe it. In Salt, you listen to the audio and you type over here. Yeah. But all these others, you actually are linking a particular segment to the transcription that you're working on. So in CLAN, there are 4 ways to do this. One is you have a waveform. And you can say, okay, that's the waveform that I want to transcribe. And that is extremely accurate. If you really want to get really accurate transcription, you would either do that or PROT would be the other most accurate system. But that takes a long time. You've got to drag the cursor over the waveform. The other is what we call transcriber mode. This was a program created in France, actually, called Transcriber. And you listen and you press the space bar after the end of everything. I don't know, for Lena, you probably wouldn't need that if you have an ITS. The other thing is called Sound Walker, and that's a method that uses the old method of a foot pedal. Okay? Well, now you can still buy foot pedals. They're on USB. Okay? So you can go like this and wind back. So you have on the foot pedal, you go like this backwards, forwards, like that. Okay? But you can also do it with your hand, backwards, forwards, so you like that, okay. And we have a whole system that pretends it's an old foot pedal. So you go back and you go forward, and actually my transcribers use this system. That's the most really, if you want really good transcription. And then you can cheat, which is the way I do it. And I just listen. I say it began here, ended there, put in a number. And I'm real good at that. Okay. So, okay. And one good thing about CLAN is you can export to CSV files. So a lot of the programs will allow you to take the data into R, into Excel, and so on. And one thing we're also now about to put on is complete database support. So we're using a system developed in the Mertens Institute in the Netherlands, and in a month or two we'll have that working. So Elan is fantastic, though, for other things, particularly for video. Elan is really good because it allows you, so chat gives you a transcript like you read in a book. But Elan gives you a timeline like this, okay? So you can see if you have different annotations that, you know, they go in time. So it, one good thing is that you can convert back and forth between chat and Elan. If you're a little careful, you have to be careful what you do, but you can go from a chat file into Elan and see the alignment and then go back into chat and do annotation. So that is probably the best system. If you really want to get into acoustic analysis, then you're in another world. And that might be very important for really early vocalizations and, you know, that kind of thing. At that point, the best systems would be Prot and Phon. So actually, Phon is now, the Phon program has all of Prot inside. So the complete Prot system works inside the Phon program. And the Phon gives you capacity to do phonological analysis, and Prot gives you capacity to do acoustic analysis. So you can get everything, really. Also, Phon is convertible into chat. So that's really good, I think. Now, the other system is DataView, which is probably the fastest system for transcribing. They've done a very good job. This is from DataBerry. And they've done a very good job of giving you little buttons on the screen that, like an old video recorder, you know, rewind, instead of having to, you know, it's just very good display on the screen. And maybe someday we'll do that too, but right now I would say you could probably do about 25% faster than we can in CLAN using DataView. I would say Elan is probably slower for I've never transcribed in Elan. Who transcribes in Elan? So do you find it quick, slow? What do you think? Of course, you come from MPI, but yeah.
Once you get over the initial sort of learning the key commands,
pretty quick. Okay.
But I do my process, I do the deorization first.
Oh, you're doing the deorization first. Yeah, okay. See, in CLAN, you're doing it at the same time. Yeah, yeah. Well, that would be a little bit different, yeah. Anyway, then of course, a lot of people say, oh, I'm just going to transcribe in Word, you know, or Salt. Sorry. But, it's not as, you know, not a dead end because you can convert from Word into CLAN. It's just very painful, but it can be done. There's also a system called Transcriber. Did I say Transcriber? TransAnna. I meant TransAnna. Sorry. TransAnna. That's for people who do conversation analysis like it, but it's also very, very hard to get out of TransAnna. It has its own proprietary format, and so it's intended for people who just want their own little data and look at their own little data and really never share it with the world. Okay, I think that's it. Okay, yeah.
Are there any questions before we move on? There's a lot of information here. Now, you saw all these words like that.
Yeah.
One question, because transcription of language other than English.
Yes.
Other
than English.
Oh, yes, of course. We have many, many languages and styles. I mean, we have, you know, Hebrew, and we have crazy Hebrew, and we even do Arabic.
Okay, I tried to Maltese, and they've got a morphology. So
yeah.
It has to be something I
devised
for the language.
What language?
Maltese.
Oh, Maltese. What's Maltese? How do they write? They're in Nigeria? What do they write?
In Roman.
In Roman, fantastic.
Yeah.
Oh, Maltese.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I have to think about the way the
code was morphing. Oh, yes. Well, that, of course, you're definitely in the world of clan at that point. Okay, there's no other system that is doing this. I have gotten data recently from this lady who worked in New Guinea with this crazy, you know, Papuan language, Nungon. And, you know, if she can do it with this language spoken by 100 people, I'm sure we can do it with Maltese. You know, I mean, her language has no dictionary, you know. I mean, Maltese has all this, you have grammars, you have everything. So, it is somewhat more difficult. One thing, though, is that there are becoming more and more computational linguistic resources, what we call limited resource languages. I don't think Maltese is a limited resource, actually. It's not limited, but these problems are getting better and better over time. But we can talk to them.
Other questions? Yes.
I have a question for Mandarin transcription. So in order to calculate something out of it, we need to insert
spaces. We solved the problem.
Oh, you solved
the problem. Yeah, we did. So there is extreme debate in the Chinese language community about spaces. You find, and I actually used some software that was made in China, and it was terrible. Okay, so we used a new approach. We used a thing called greedy search. We take CEDIC, which is the it has 100,000 words of Chinese. And it starts at the beginning, it takes the maximum thing, and it puts a space. So it tries to find the longest match, put a space, another longest match. So you can find some problems, but with child language, there are almost no problems. It does a beautiful job. And we're going to put that in CLAN. I mean, I have it working already.
Yeah.
I'd say about 2 weeks. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you have to use this. Right now, you would have to use it in Unix. Yeah, but it will, we'll put it in CLAN maybe in 2 months. Yeah. But I'm so enthusiastic about this. It worked so well. Yeah.
Other questions? Okay. So let's keep going. Okay. So as you can see, I'm usually not a very positive person. You already saw with it wrong way. So basically, if you don't get the Lina, then there's nothing easy. There's no download, put my recording, get back something that's super useful. You have to do even in that case, you need to do some work. And even if you have Lina, then some things remain challenging. So in particular, if you have, depending on the population you work with, this will be more or less of a problem. If you work with people who have the radio on or the TV on all the time, that remains really challenging. And so what Lina will do is we'll put it in a category that's overlap because that has human speech and it also has TV, electronic, etc. So that, since there are two categories recognized and the way that the Lina parser works doesn't allow two things to overlap, then they go to a category that's called overlap. So for instance, I was looking at the Bergelson datasets on Homebank, and for some of the kids, for some of the hours, 60 to 80% of the hour is overlap. So that means that you get the Lina output, you say, I'm happy, I'm thrilled, I have everything I need. Well, no, because it's not, there will be a certain proportion of your data for which you have no information. There could be speech there, but it could be something else. Okay, and we'll go to the question of accuracy later on. Another thing that people really want to know is, well, you want to know the input to the child, you want to know the input that's relevant to the child, that's directly to the child, or that's spoken in a child-directed form, because you think that that might be what they're learning from. And that's a problem that seems simple. We've been hearing for years, they tell us, oh, you know, this is just emotional classification that's been solved in speech technology 3 years ago. It turns out it's a really hard problem. And even now we have this nice data set with which we can evaluate algorithms, and the accuracy is about 70%, which might be fine for some purposes. I'll go back to that later. There's also no classifier for languages in bilingual samples, but hopefully as the bilingual community grows and they start producing annotations that can be used to build classifiers, this, on the contrary, is the task on which there's many people working in the world. Speech technologies are already working on bilingual classification or multilingual classification, and some of the performances are really impressive. So there's a sample of conversational speech that has been tagged for many languages. Last year means decades ago, because that field moves very fast. But there was a system that classified with 80% accuracy a sample that had 17 languages in it. Okay? So this is a field where there's a lot of people working, there's money in it, they care about it. And so if we could create the data set that they can use to build the application for us, that might be good. On the other hand, whereas these two, I think they're not solved today, but they might be solved in the next 3 years, having an automatic transcription, so something you put it in and Siri tells you what the child said and what the parent said, I think that's not going to be solved in the next 10 years. Maybe I'm wrong. It would be great to be wrong. I know that people in the Netherlands are actually trying to build speech recognizers that will transcribe child speech. I'm not sure. Maybe they will prove me wrong and I would be very happy to hear. But for now, it doesn't seem like we'll get transcriptions for free. We'll have to continue doing them by hand. Yes.
Can we use some voice recognition software? Because right now in our team we're trying to add our RA to GK.
Yes, that you can do. And there's already a team in Sweden who's done that recently. So basically what they do is they listen through the recording and they just speak it out clearly.
Revoice.
Re-speak. I think I learned this term last week, re-speak. And you get the transcription, but it's you, yeah. Does that make sense?
And then we've tried that, and none of my RAs will use it because it doesn't insert periods and overlaps and all the marks that we in CLAN would want to have in chat. But you can get a transcript. So it's a very, very rough. It's the level that DataBrary is already. They're doing just these very crude transcriptions. And if you want that, then this would work for that.
Right.
In fact, at that point, you could just do it on an iPhone.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That will give you the orthography, and then you can add all the codes.
Adding then is a lot of work.
Right.
And there's no doubt. I don't know that the diarization is very good.
That you need to do by hand.
Yeah, see, because now you're revoicing, it's not off. If there might be ways to get that to work. So if you heard a piece, then revoice that piece, we could get something better, but right now it's not ideal.
Mm.
Yeah. But the other is to send this off to IBM Watson. And sometimes they might do it, at least with some of the sentences.
Yeah.
And that's really interesting.
Okay. So then, if you want to get something free and apparently painless, then you get the Lina. And so if you get the Lina, how does it work? Basically, what they did is this process of segmentation or diarization was done exclusively through acoustic pattern matching on small chunks. Yeah, they take the whole day long, and then they move through in chunks of 300 milliseconds, and they try to classify these 300 milliseconds into different categories. How they did the classification? Well, they built it based on 150 hours that they had hand-segmented and transcribed. And with these, they built models for target child, other child, female adult, male adult, overlap, and then several background categories that we probably don't care about, well, that are less language-related, like LCD electronics. So once you have your audio signal that has been tagged as this is child near, this is female adult near, now that it comes like that, you can say, well, this is a turn, right? This is a turn from the child to the adult. And so for free, now you also have counting of turns over the whole day. In the persons that have been tagged as being female adults or male adults, they're going to give you an estimation of the word count. And you might wonder, how can that be? They don't describe, how can they know? So basically what they did is they built a big regression in which each of these parts of the female adult or male adult had been, they tried to build a speech recognizer, but they know it's really, really bad. And so this speech recognizer is going to say, this is a consonant, this is a vowel, this is a consonant, this is a vowel. And it's going to count the consonants and vowels in that segment, and then these get some magic beta that we don't know, because it's inside the program. I don't know, maybe it weighs 2.5 consonants and 1.5 vowels, and that gives you a word. That's the estimate for the word. Oh, we also have the other one, if you want.
Oh, it's a different one.
Go ahead.
Everything's always different, you remember?
Well, yeah, that's... Yeah.
No, go ahead, you talk, and I can do this.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, and so that's how they approximate the word count, and I'll show you some numbers to how they do. And they also use the same speech recognizer, which essentially was, the same speech recognizer to try to decide whether the kid's vocalization was linguistic or non-linguistic. In the later versions of Lina, the current version, apparently they have a new thing that goes more in detail in this classification of the child vocalization, the child output. I will let you look at that, because since I decided to go the non-Lina route a couple of years ago, I've sort of lost track on new developments. Okay, so how well do they do? So you notice that the very first task is segmentation. You might ask me how well they do in segmentation. So here they said, you can see that there's, you can have a child to a female adult, you can also have a bit of silence, but that silence actually can only have a certain duration. If you have a silence of 150 milliseconds, for you it's foreseeable, for the machine it's not, okay? So that silence of 100 milliseconds will not be noticed and will be inside the child's heart. So then you can ask yourself, how good is the segmentation? I'm interested in conversational dynamics, and I want to know, do they overlap? Do they actually wait for a long time? What's the gap duration, the average gap duration? That kind of thing, we don't really know. This system has never been evaluated in this sense, probably because it wasn't developed as a system to study conversational analysis. It was developed as a very broad tool to get some idea of how the child was developing and their environment. So the first task for which we actually have evaluation is in that chunk that the system called child, or that the human called child, do human and system agree? And so basically, let's start with what's the best we can hope for, agreement across human races. This was actually calculated by extracting from a certain number of families, which I've now forgotten. I want to say 20, but don't hold me on that. Maybe I'll see the numbers later. From 20 families, they extracted 10 whole minutes, and they presented these to the human rater. So, when you compare two human raters, for the categorization of adults versus non-adults, so it doesn't matter whether it's female or male adults, all of those go in the same. It doesn't matter if it's the target child or another child. All of those go in the same category. For that one, they agree 88%. For the key child versus other child, it's 91%. That was the Lina number. Hanna Elo in Finland has done a quite detailed evaluation based on two children who have twins. Each of them has a twin. So that's a particularly tough one for the key child. And she's getting numbers for inter-racial agreements that are about that large, 85%. Is anyone shocked by those numbers? Do they sound okay to you? Were you expecting 100% agreement in human racers? No? Well, I was.
Well, I mean, the key child versus other child depends on the closeness of the birth.
The closeness of the
birth? If the children are almost the same age.
If they're twins, for instance.
Twins. I mean,
that's pretty hard.
So, I mean, I know when we listened to my two kids, they were just a little over a year and a half apart, and sometimes it's not that easy.
That's how you see it. But adults versus non-adults, I was expecting near ceiling performance for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That is a little...
That's a bit interesting. So to me, this number suggests that perhaps their human rights agents are really not top, they're not like us. You know, they don't care about the minute detail, right? Gives me an idea. But maybe they're a good estimate of if you were to have this done by people who are doing this for class credits, then maybe these are the numbers you'll get.
Does non-adult mean child?
Yes.
Then why don't they say child? And they might mean TV.
No, my understanding is that they focus on adult versus child.
And why didn't they say child? Yeah.
We can look at the
yeah,
DINA technical report together, yeah. Okay. So when you have two humans, then you just look at their agreement. When you have a human and a machine, we actually can calculate two different numbers. One that we'll call sensitivity. So what percentage of segments the human calls X, the machine also calls X, where specificity is the opposite. Do you guys see that? Maybe I'll draw. I think I might have it, a cheat sheet. Yes, I always have it in the bottom, but since in the back you don't see it. So basically you have your human calls X. What proportion of the machine calls X? So that's the sensitivity. This means, are you finding all the stuff I wanted to find? You can also do it the other way around. The machine calls this X. What proportion of those the human calls X? That we call specificity. Of the stuff you tell me, this is the child. What percentage is actually a child, and what percentage is junk? It's not the category I care about.
So this is precision and accuracy also.
Yes, it is. It is. And interestingly, the numbers in the literature are not, we don't have all the numbers for both. And there's a couple of ways of thinking about it. I've put in red, one is the big picture. You just focus on the red versus the non-red. The red is below 75%. Why 75%? I don't know. I need some threshold, but it's 75%. And you can see that most of the stuff is not red. You can also see that most of the red is in the specificity. So that means if you get the Lina, if you buy the Lina, and you just trust what the labels tell you, if this is the case, right? The machine tells you this child, what percentage of this is the child, you actually find lots of errors. One particularly salient case is this data set that's based on Mandarin that was collected by Lina Associates, so we can really think that they know what they're doing, right? They know the technology very well. They could have adapted it. And they actually, for the child and other child, they report a specificity of 21%. That means that 79% of the recording of the labels, the terms that have been labeled as child, are not child. There's something else. Okay? Any questions on that?
Well, they were trained on English.
Yes.
And now they're trying to do Chinese. Oh, my God.
Without retraining.
Okay.
Without changing the entrails of the system. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, she doesn't have accuracy. She has word counts, so I'll show her data in word counts. Any other comments on this? Questions? Okay. So then these are the messages that I take home. In terms of sensitivity, it's not much worse than human coders. Remember, human coders were 88%. Basically, these numbers are really ballpark. Some of them can be a little bit higher, but that seems it seems that in terms of sensitivity, of the stuff I labeled as X, did you find it? It seems pretty good. But specificity doesn't seem to be so great, extremely variable across studies. So one question that you must ask yourself is, what kind of effect size am I looking for? Is the kind of effect I'm interested in going to be messed up by this proportion of noise? And if you're into programming, then you can actually do a forward simulation to decide how much level of noise your hypothesis could tolerate. And if you're not, you just do adjustments of whether this kind of level of noise would be fine for you. Okay, so the second thing you get for free is for each of the adult segments, you get some kind of word count. How good is that? And let's remember that this was all based on a speech recognizer that was trained on broadcast English. So you might think, oh, it will be horrible when it goes to other languages. Turns out that for English, it's pretty good. For other languages, it's not bad either, right? So these are all around 75%. That also includes the Mandarin study. So the non-English samples are Spanish, French. You might say, well, that's okay. Maybe they're sort of Indo-European. We're all in the same ballpark. Swedish and Mandarin. So in terms of adult workout, it seems that the Lina is doing a pretty good job, which makes sense because the Lina was developed to count words in the input and give us an idea of how much quantity of input kids get. Okay, if there are no questions, then I move on to the next one. The next one is the child vocalization count. And as you can imagine, since this is actually just a derivation of the diarization that you get over there, in English, where it seems to be pretty good, the counting of how much the child vocalizes or how many turns you get with the parent is totally dependent on how well you do in actually pulling out the child. And so in the case of Gilkerson, where they found this really low performance specificity in terms of the detection of the child, well, this count was actually really, really bad. It was below 25%. Okay. There are many other things that we might want to have evaluation for. And I mentioned there's not a lot of evaluation on segmentation. There's not a lot of evaluation on how complex the vocalizations of the child are, but perhaps many of you who are researchers might not want to have a ready number of how many complex vocalizations. You might actually just want to have the vocalization and then go in and check for yourself. So maybe that's fine. There's also not a lot of very global evaluations. So if you're just interested in knowing how advanced is this child, and you think it might be nice to have them wear a recording for a couple of days and just get the number of how advanced they are, does that correlate with interesting stuff? Does it correlate with CDI? Does it predict their later academic success, et cetera, et cetera? There are a few, but that might be an interesting thing that we would want to see more of. For those who just want to use it as a very broad measurement, be sure that they're actually getting value out of that recording. So I think okay. So that's what you get for free. That's the evaluation of what you get for free with the Lina. But many of us actually think that you can use the Lina output just as a first point. So some people at the very beginning had actually gotten the Lina output and tried to fix the segmentation. And you actually found that that wasn't a very good use of your time, right? Was it you or was it Anne?
Who did? I've done a little bit of that, but some people find it better than others, but it's not as good as you would. Your initial idea is, oh, this is the right way to go.
Right. It'll be easy. I'll just move it around. Yeah. Okay. And the other possibility is to use. Do I have a slide? Sorry, I forgot this part. Oh, yeah. Is to use the Lina segmentation, but then do something else. And in this process of doing something else, you're going to clean up some of the mess that's produced. And so I think that a very good example, well, many people actually just use the Lina to say, oh, here the child is vocalizing a lot. I'll go in and I will hand tag all the canonical babbling, or I have a lot of turns between the adult and the child. I'll go in and look at their conversational dynamics in those 5 minutes of the whole day. So that's one way to go. You just use the Lina to help you zoom in to one part of the whole day.
If you were in an ITS, you would really have a hard time playing that segment of the wave, whereas in plan, you can click on that utterance and play it. Isn't that a big problem? I mean, can you work with ITS? I've never tried.
In the Lina software, you can, for example, like zoom in on a particular section where you can see in the graphs that it's high volubility. It's more visual, and then you can click on that and play it. So, but it's not at the level of this.
You don't have individual, yeah.
But no, but they also export it to, their export to transcriber is more useful if that's what you want to do.
Yeah.
Like zoom in on.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so to give you an idea, you get your recording, you plug it in. Depending on the complexity of the audio that's been recorded, it will take 15 minutes to 2.5 hours to process. After that time, you have this image that tells you, oh, here there's a lot of TV, well, that's going to be messy to transcribe, I'm just going to ignore it. Oh, here the child is talking a lot. You double click, you get the 5 minutes looking. You double click, you listen to it, you say, oh, this is a nice one, there's a lot of richness. The kid is here talking a lot, I'm just going to export that. Right click, you get the 5 minutes WAV and the export to transcribing, and then you get your adult. You already.
Each time you load another one, you got to wait 2.5 hours.
No, that's, you do it once for a recording. Now it's processed. Now it's there forever.
And then, but if you go back to it later on, you have to do it again?
No.
Oh, never. Oh, okay.
No, you just import it, and now it's processed,
okay.
And you have it forever. Was that useful to imagine how you would do it? Yeah. Okay. So, in this project that I mentioned where a data set was built to... Chris, don't you want to move forward?
No,
I'm fine. Okay. Where a data set was built to allow speech technologies to build a classifier for child versus adult speech. In that case, what they did is they used the Lean output to find 20 conversational blocks with, so basically they set these numbers. They said, well, we're going to fill out 20 conversational blocks from each family, and each one should have at least 10 male adult or female adult near terms. And this you can do very quickly. There was a script that was written for this. The blocks were pulled out, and they were stored in a way that they can be used to present human coders. So each of the blocks was presented to 3 human coders who were asked to label each male adult or female adult term. They could listen through the whole thing, and each of the right segments, they would just click a button that would say, this is child or speech, this is adult or speech, this is junk, this is something that it shouldn't be there, it's not a male adult or a female adult, it's something else that shouldn't have been there. And they get great inter-rater agreements. Numbers, and I think it was really fast, right?
It was very fast, and the inter-rater reliability was a lot better than we thought it would be. And this code is available on the next Homebank GitHub. I'm not sure if it's directly available.
Yes, it is. Now it is.
Good. So you can use this. You can use this to take a set of data recordings and do your own annotation. If you want to edit it to be labeling something other than EDS versus ABS.
And it's all in Python, right?
Sorry?
It's all in Python?
Yeah, it's in Python, and it is super quick to do this annotation because you're just listening in and pressing buttons, so it's almost one-to-one.
Okay, and the nice thing about this is that you also clean up any mess that's left, and you get a pretty quick annotation on some level that you care about. Of course, this is annotation, it's not transcription. It's just you're adding some level of detail on a specific segment or chunk. So this is, as we just mentioned, available on our GitHub repository. There's many, many different scripts. I think there's probably no point. I mentioned some of them early on, and you have access to this. And at the end of this presentation, I will have some links for you in case you want to try some of the scripts. But there's many different things, and since some people work on MATLAB, some people work on R, some people work on Pratt, it's nice because if you know one of these languages, you will probably find someone else who did the thing that you want to do in the language that you can use, and then you can more easily see it. Okay, so let's imagine now that you don't have the Lena. This is my case. Well, I have the Lena, but I decided not to use it. And so, can you do this diarization? In fact, to get to the diarization where I say X, Y, and Z are talking at this point, the first thing you want to do is establish where their speech. It's basically a speech-non-speech task. That's what's called the voice activity detection. This is vocalization, that's not vocalization. Many people over the years have told me this is a trivial task. This was solved 10 years ago. It's not true. So whenever you try anything that Pratt, Elan, or the Python voice activity detection libraries, you get performances like this one. my RA doesn't know a lot of statistics, and he says to me, it's great. I got the Python thing to work with a correlation of 0.5. He was super happy. And then I look at this, and I say, but look, the human actually finds real durations between 0 and 50 seconds, whereas the machine is actually grossly overestimating the voice presence systematically. So the human here says there's 10 seconds of speech. Well, the machine might have found 10 seconds, but it could also have found 60 seconds. 60 seconds was the maximum. So basically, I don't think that they're actually finding voice, they're just finding noise, right? They're not used to our real-life noisy recordings where there's birds chirping and there's doors opening and closing. They just detect anything that's noisy and will say, oh, that's speech. Okay. So none of these remotely approximate the Nina's performance, and none of them does speaker classification, right? Because on top of this, you need to classify who's talking. But the good thing is that we've been talking more and more with people in speech technology, and the good thing is that they know a lot more about this than I do, and the people in my own little team do. And so they've gotten really interested in this problem. They so far have built two different items. Are people interested in hearing the specifics of these, of the performance, or of how they work? Maybe I'll say something general, and if you want more, you tell me. But by and large, one first approach is basically a recipe like a script. And Kaldi is an open source platform for building pipelines for speech technology. It's a bit like it's called recipe because it's like a cooking recipe. You get your script, and you can pull scripts from different places, and you can build a pipeline, a processing pipeline, quite easily if you know your way around. And so they just did this, for a student project. It didn't take them very long. They did it for a couple of months. It probably took them more time to get CITI certified, to be able to access a certain thing, and to figure out how to work with this very nice signal. And they get S-scores of around 0.7, 0.8. That's totally comparable to Lina. Okay? So that looks pretty good. It's based on only one data set, so about seven hours that have been transcribed. But for child, for the key child and for the female adult, they get a pretty good performance. For other adults and child, they get a lower performance. And that makes sense because in these recordings, and perhaps in your recordings too, those might be less prevalent. So they had fewer examples to work from. They also tried another approach that was supposed to be top of the line, the thing that's scoring the best right now, but they didn't get that to work very much, very well at all. And in general, one problem that they seem to be having, so this person is working on this right now, as we speak, or maybe he's sleeping right now, but he will be in a few hours, because he's on the East Coast. One problem that they have is that we, even in this data set, we've continued doing the annotation, the segmentation, in human terms. This is something I learned this morning. Okay. So he said, well, this is fine. Obviously, the sentence starts here and it ends here, but there are silences inside. There are hesitations. The ends are not really, there's a little bit of silence or hesitation at the end as well, and that should have been marked, and it's not marked.
Yeah.
And so there's going to be a little bit of process in learning to tag the segmentations the way they need them. But I think we'll get there eventually. And these results from last year seem extremely promising, right?
So you're saying the real problem is the training corpus.
The real problem is the training corpus, exactly. So basically what Delina did right was getting this age and SES varied sample, 329 children. And of these, here are the numbers, 70 kids went into the training set, the testing set, and 309 kids, for whom a half an hour had been extracted, went into the training set. So that's the 150 hours I mentioned earlier that they used for the training. If we want to do the same, we might not need 150 hours because they were using technology that's 15 or 20 years old. And they basically, their foundation, they cannot go further than that. The engineer that they have is the engineer they have for the rest of their life. But we can do something better because we have this nice context of people who are staying at the top of the state of the art, what they call the bleeding edge. So we can do better than that. And the nice thing is if we start building Lina software alternatives, is that all of us who are a little bit concerned about this idea of using English as an acoustic model for all of our languages can rest assured that the transition towards a new language will be something under our control, right? It might not be easy, but it's something that we can try to do. So basically, the bottleneck to match the Lina Foundation is getting more segmented data, and that's where it becomes painful because that means that we need to go back to annotation. We cannot escape this. Okay. Are there any questions? I think that's my... Oh, we need to share back. So that's why we need to do it. Any other questions before we move on to the next section? Okay, everyone's really warm. Good thing that we got the... Did you guys get the fans?
How are we doing for time? I think we're a little off schedule. Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay. A little behind schedule. I'm going to rush through mine then because I think it's really important to spend some time on the DARPA annotation scheme. So I'm just going to talk very briefly about some things to think about in cleaning up and working with your data set. So a big issue is nap time. So in Lina, you can check for silent periods, people, and then this needs to be human checked afterwards. And other software, if you're not using Lina, there's other software that can help you find silent periods. One caution with excluding nap time from your data is that it does challenge cross-cultural comparisons because, as we've seen with trying to compare across some data sets, not every culture has a silent period nap time to compare with. Some other quality issues involve outdoor clothing in the wintertime, and times when the recorder gets removed from the child for bath time, car rides, non-compliance. They just forget for whatever reason they take it off the child, and you don't necessarily know that. And one of the things about the Lina software is that it is actually dependent on the recorder being where it's supposed to be. And if it's not where it's supposed to be, if it's way over there, the classification is just all off. So one thing that I very much recommend if you're a data collector is to have log sheets, and this is an example from Derek Houston and Jesse Reed that I really like. Just to record things like when the child went down for a nap and other things that might be helpful in understanding and processing the data set. Doing it at the time, like having the observation sheet with you while the recording's taking place, is obviously going to lead to much higher accuracy, but it's also going to be a source of distraction and reduce the naturalism. So in a lot of cases, so if you're pausing the recorder, it's probably good to get accuracy. When was the recorder actually paused? But in some of these other things, like when did nap time take place, can be done, you know, something that you get the participant to do at the end of the day. So another critical issue is subsampling, and we have lots of great examples to try and convince you that sampling is really necessary, but I'll skip those. So there's a couple different options. One option that Alex has been trying out is sampling 1 minute per hour, so getting a regular subsample over the course of the day. Another option is to sample, especially if you're trying to look at individual variation, is to take a time period that's going to be consistent across the participants, so something like mealtime, and then you can look specifically at mealtime and then compare across the participants on that particular time. Some other options are using Lina, for example, to find high volume areas, or high adult input areas or high child output areas, and find those to focus your analysis if you're not trying to quantify the amount of speech but looking at particular characteristics. That's a good option. Okay, I'm going to skip. Oh, well, then I'm done. Okay, Mitty, come talk to us about the DARPA annotation scheme. Who does more books?
So Alex said annotation is inevitable, and hopefully since that's true, it would be the best use of our time to try and do annotation in a way that's maximally helpful for ourselves, but also for the community-wide goals we might have for people who are all dealing with the same problem. So the DAS, it stands for the Darkle Annotation Scheme, is one proposal for a way to do that. The goal of this is to eventually be able to share our annotations, our like hard-fought annotations that take forever to do, usefully. And so to do that, we want some kind of interoperable structure. There are some options for doing that now that have already been discussed. But this just means usability across multiple different platforms like Elon and Chat and Transcriber and all of that. Another important aspect of this for us in this room is that whatever these annotation infrastructures include, they should be fit for day-long recordings, which means, among other things, that they're not transcription-centric, because you're not going to transcribe your thousands of hours, and they're suited for sparser annotation for that reason. It should be something that's oriented toward automation, since that's going to be, if we can get it working, the savior of us all, which means that it would be great if there were some sort of suggested annotation types that tie into the development of these tools, but they should also be customizable because we're not expecting everyone to dedicate their career to developing tools for future researchers. And then finally, they should be designed for, along the same lines, both individual use and use within the research community generally. So that means that we should be going for something that's template-based in structure, but highly flexible, and build some sort of way of sharing our templates with each other and our changes. So our current answer to this is the Darkle Annotation Scheme. Darkle is itself another acronym inside an acronym. But anyway, you can get at some more information of this on our OSF wiki. And the idea is, whoever you are, however you've got your data, you're going to end up with at least an audio file, and you're going to want to do a couple things, probably, right? It's highly likely that most of us are going to want to find utterance boundaries, so be able to find the onsets and offsets of where utterances are in the data. You're also going to want to be able to do this at some level for individual speakers, so we don't have this overlap problem that Alex talked about with Lena. That's a big deal, actually. Humans are pretty good at this. So it's nice to be able to distinguish, for example, these two speakers from each other. Another thing we would like to do is be able to do hierarchical annotations. And what I mean by that is something like, if you determine that this is a case where the child is canonically babbling, then maybe if that's the case, you want to decide if it's a lexical production. If not, then you could stop. But if it is lexical, then you could determine if it's multi-word. If not, then you could stop. So that's what I mean by hierarchical, that you make decisions about your coding based off of what you already know instead of coding everything across the board on multiple levels. For this kind of thing, closed vocabulary is also really useful, so whatever annotation scheme we want to use should have some kind of closed vocabulary, which means multiple choice type options. Of course, for some things like transcription, that doesn't make sense. But for other things like addressee of an utterance, this is kind of a complicated one that we're using at the moment, but it could make your life a lot easier if you can associate, for example, a hotkey with each one of these, and then go through your utterances one by one, almost as the one-to-one timing Melanie was mentioning with the IDS label software. And then finally, an important thing we'd like to be able to do ideally in this scheme is store metadata. So, for example, the gender and age of the child who's the target of the recording, but also some information about the other speakers who are in the recording, maybe information about the recording itself, if you expect that the first recording day is going to be different and you're going to sample multiple times. These are just examples. All of maximum flexibility, which is a lot to ask. There's nothing that does all of these things in the perfect way. A lot of things that are quite common, you know, so these have been mentioned, this is a screenshot of Elon, this is a screenshot of Pratt, this is a screenshot of this same thing in all three platforms in chat transcript format. And, you know, you're maybe more familiar with one or the other of these. There is no reason why we shouldn't build on your existing expertise, but we have to pick something to go forward. And since I've already been picked out as an Elon person, for some reason I got to pick, we're basing the DAS around Elon. I picked it because it does these things for utterance boundaries and individual speaker tiers, hierarchical annotation, closed vocabularies, and metadata storage, so it has all of those desiderata. Here's an example of what the tier structure looks like, so if you can see what I mean by hierarchical tiers, this is the example I gave you, so vocal maturity to lexical status to multi-word status, whereas for the female adult, we could just code, for example, the addressee. And this is an example of closed vocabularies in ALON. And, yeah, this is an example of where you can put in the metadata. There are different ways of doing these in those platforms that I mentioned, but this is why I chose ALON, because it can do them. And as mentioned, it's mostly interoperable with those other things, with a few hitches here and there. Okay, so the DAS at its core is just a template, and it looks like this at its most minimal phase. So all it requires is that you identify some kind of speaker tier. It could be broad class or multi-speaker in the same way that you might imagine Alina one tier kind of thing is, but ideally you would pull out different speakers, that you put in utterance boundary annotations where you find utterances in the sample that you're annotating, and minimally you fill it with this zero dot, which indicates that it's yet to be filled. This is the absolute sort of minimum version of the template, but it can be customized to do what you have, whatever you like. So here is an example of the same, whatever, 2 seconds of a transcript with the minimum, with the one that I showed you earlier where I'm coding, you know, lexical status and whether it's a multi-word production for the child and a few things for the other speakers without having to transcribe, for example. And this is like, well, this is some of my data. This is a like much more fully customized one that includes, since the language isn't one that most people speak, the translation to Spanish for all of the things, as well as full transcription and notes here, and because I actually have video tier. So the idea is that, Okay, the idea is that if you use the DAS, you start out with something like this, you read a few tutorials, and given those tutorials, you adapt it in whatever way that you need. That's really the basics of it. It's all about the documentation, which I'm not going to go through in detail here, but you can find it at this place. I'm just going to talk really briefly about how it fulfills these last two things that we'd like. The first is that we're trying to build a community around this. So, like I said, there's a lot of documentation you can find on that Open Science Framework website. Here, this is an example of the set of tutorials we've built for a specific implementation of the DAS. So, this would be a specific implementation, and this is a general one, right? So, this is mine for my own project, but we built another one for the Occlue project, which we haven't talked about, and this is just an example. This is linked to the main DAS page. You can go into the specific project, you can find the templates for that project, and you can find the tutorials for using that template and the guidelines about what is specific about those, and that's something that we envision other people who use the DAS could do, and then you can go and look at other people's templates, borrow their ideas, exchange documentation, all that kind of thing. An important part of this is also keeping things updated on GitHub as well. One really nice thing about ALON is that those closed vocabularies can actually work through a stable link somewhere. So if you want to update your closed vocabulary and you have a network of people who are using a template, as soon as they reopen ALON, it's automatically updated, which is really nice. So it's good for using that. And then, of course, for the tool development and the future implementations of this, we've got a lot of really great people working together on this. And here I'm just trying to tempt you into actually using it and find out more about it. You're already here, so maybe you're already tempted. But we've got, you know, Anna Bryan, people you know well, the DARPA group, the Occlue group, who are including a big group of tools people that Melanie and Alex have been talking about. And then this is Hans Lutjes. He's currently the developer, the primary developer of ALON, which means we can make specific requests about new functionality in the coming years. So I just say this to make you believe that it's a promising area to go after, that you should use VAS because it will help us build an annotation infrastructure that's designed for our future goals, not just for now. So hope that's helped you. Okay, we have like 10 minutes for breakout sessions.
Yeah, so I think maybe I suppose we say last 10 minutes just for a general discussion and questions. You can approach any of us about becoming a member as we have a membership for here. I specified some specific questions that all of you
have
so this is based on your responses to the form. If you have questions about these things that approach us, if you're using multiple capture, that's the person to talk to, and so on and so forth. And then the other thing I encourage you to do is, at any point, you can look through these basically features of different aspects of things we talked about today. At any point, contact us with questions. We'd be happy to help you out. I can imagine many things you might want to be doing for instance tonight and throughout the evening. Well, we're here. We'll be happy to answer questions.
Or the email after the conference. Sure. Or by the email. Yes.
In the email that I forwarded you,
then one thing about becoming a member, we do need everyone to have IRB training. And if you're in the States, you probably have some certificate from your university, but if you're abroad, it often is more of a problem, but we set up a method so that you can pretend you're at CMU and get city training. It's actually documented on the website how to do this. So actually there's no problem, but you have to do it this way. Because I don't believe that France has a standard method yet, for example. Many countries don't, but we want one standard method, so you have to do it this way. Takes about an hour and a half to do, I think. Okay, you have to prove that you understand very basic things. Yes.
One question. It's expired, right? If you go to training, then you have to...
I'm sorry, if you already have... What was the word? Expire?
Yeah, I mean, it's like you have to renew your training.
Every 3 or 4 years.
Yeah. Yeah. 2 years.
Is it true? Well, I don't really care that much about 2 years. I mean, really, if you're so that you've ever done it, and we would accept virtually anything, but a lot of people have nothing, and that's not good.